Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a player who plays all over the world and goes by the handle Vagabond. Vagabond, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
First off, let's get started with how did you get started in the AP world and how long ago was this?
Well, around 20 years ago, I discovered a video poker game. It was a Deuces Wild game. I was traveling through Finland and I think it was at some random coffee shop and was interested in the game and later caught my attention. It really bothered me that I didn't know the correct strategy to certain plays. So
did you know enough to know it was a good pay schedule?
It probably definitely was not a good pay schedule, but it was, for me, it was a fun game, especially, high variance of Deuces Wild. I always wanted to know how to play it correctly. So that kind of led me down into the AP world, even though I had no idea it had any name.
So what did you do? Just Google video poker or strategy, or did you run your own, build your own program?
Oh, no. I think I went on Amazon, and one of the first books I read was Gene Scott's The Frugal Gambler. So, which got into comp hustling, which is another thing down the road that I first started doing. And, I think it was just the Amazon ebook is probably the bestseller, one in the top of the list. And so that's how I got started.
All right. So
how did you switch from there into blackjack?
That's an interesting story. I had known about card counting, but for a while I was a little, it's kind of hard to say this, but I was a little scared to join the table because, the human element, you had to, not only learn how to play the game, but also get away with it in front of the dealer and the pit boss and supervisor and all the heat and how to deal with the table. So it's quite a while before I got into table games, but I'm so glad that I did.
Were you, now you don't seem particularly shy, but you've been doing this for a while. Would you describe yourself in general as shy?
Yeah, I'm definitely an introvert. I've had to overcome a lot of fear, a lot of shyness. Now a lot of my enjoyment at the game since blackjack is kind of boring to play. A lot of enjoyment I get is actually, the interaction with the dealers and, chatting with them and getting them to reveal dirty secrets about their bosses, they love to talk bad about, who's cheating on who and all the, dirty inside secrets. And so I'm always taking mental note of that. And, who's sharp, who's weak, who's new, who used to be a floor cleaner and, is just working there because they had the badge.
Well, also, for me anyway, you travel extensively all over the world. And for me, when I'm in another country, the interesting part is not going to see the Eiffel Tower. It's just talking to the people who live there and how they live and what it's like to live there. And
So,
if you're talking to the dealers in some, out of the way country, to me, that would be the most interesting part.
Right. For me, that's, I've gotten a lot out of that, taking cruise ships, because a lot of the dealers are from other countries. And so I've talked to, dealers from Senegal, and then I'm learning about Senegal, and of course I'm asking what are the limits, and do you have early surrender, what's going on in Senegal? And they all have experience from back in their home country, so it's interesting from cultural perspective, and you learn some language, and just learning a few words, and they're pretty happy,
but also valuable scouting without having to fly all the way to Senegal.
Oh, definitely.
But if you're asking those questions, that does not alert them that you are somebody to watch closely?
Well, I think it's all in how you phrase the question, how you lead the conversation. So if it's a bit from my past, I've spent a year as an interrogation analyst in Afghanistan. So I wasn't the interrogator, but I definitely phrased the question. So
you would tell the interrogator what to ask?
Right. There's the questions that we wanted answered. And I went to training with some of them, and you know, learned how to pose certain questions so the conversation would later develop into gaining pieces of intel that I can get from the dealer without really alerting them that I posed the question. They just started, you know, talking a bit too much about, you know, the casino and the conditions and,
how did you,
know,
you
inside.
Learn that? How did you learn that?
It's just something I learned. I was, you know, this is probably getting ahead of myself, but something I learned through, you know, extra training with, you know, the U.S. Army and you know, DIA, some other agencies.
So, would you suggest working for the government in the intelligence thing is a good training for AP work?
Well, I think it doesn't hurt. I spent 9 years in the U.S. Air Force. During that time, the last 5 years, I was stationed at Fort Meade, so I spent 5 years working at the National Security Agency, and it was definitely interesting work, but when my contract had come up, it's time for me to move on to something else.
Now, so you mentioned working for the NSA. Does that aid you in going through customs and immigration? I mean, did you learn things working there that would help you as a traveler? Not specifically as a gambler, but just knowing about what to do and not to do when you go through customs and stuff?
I think generally, since I used to work for the government, I kind of see how customs would act and, you know, what they're doing when they're, you know, asking non-threatening questions. They're just probing to see how you respond, if you're comfortable with your answer. You know, if, you know, they just ask me flat up, why are you declaring so much cash? I say I'm a gambler. And, you know, when their first question is, oh, what do you play? Or they assume, oh, poker? And I say, well, not exactly. And so they're, you know, they have a job to do, and I understand where they're coming from, but it's still not an enjoyable experience.
All right. So how did Don Johnson help you when you were doing this?
I was... very funny. Not directly, of course. Is right around the time, I think it was 2014, I was leaving the agency, and all my coworkers, they were wondering, you know, what are you going to do after this? And, you know, the employment situation's not that good. Why are you leaving such a good job? Are you going to go into contracting, government contracting? And I just got so tired of their questions and letting them know what I'm doing. They, right around that same time, John Johnson was in the news, and there was an article about his big win in Atlantic City where he had won $15 million or something.
Yeah.
And so right around that time, I used that article, printed out, and showed people. I said, I'm going to be a blackjack player just like this guy, you know. And they thought
you are.
Yeah, they just stopped asking questions. They knew I jumped off the deep end, and I'm sure they thought I was joking
or just unlikely to succeed. Well, I won't ask you how close you've come to Don Johnson's winning a $15 million
nowhere near that.
I would assume there's a couple of zeros in there difference, but okay, how is your approach to playing blackjack different from guys who get barred all the time?
Well, I think one advantage I have is the ability to travel anywhere and leave whenever I feel uncomfortable. I'm not tied to a specific geographic location. And I quickly got into advantages in games other than blackjack counting. And so it's much harder to pick off. Nowadays, I also count cards. It's, you know, it's back on my list of to-dos, but, usually I think that I've gotten very few backoffs because when I see the heat coming, I'm just not afraid to just get out of there. And, you know, I try not to cash out chips sometimes and, just move on to the other place. You know, there's so many casinos worldwide.
So you've been in over 100 countries, right?
Yes.
And, how do you, what percentage of time do you spend playing in the U.S. and what percentage is outside the U.S.?
Well, recently I've been playing more in the U.S., but I would say it's about 75% international and 25% in America.
And how do you deal with the issue of carrying the cash in and out of not just the U.S., but all these countries? I mean, some of these countries are very poor, and if you show up with $50,000 in cash, you know, it can be a big issue.
Yes, it definitely is, but usually I'm treated with respect because even in poor countries, there's a lot of income disparity, so the very, very rich are taken care of. So showing up with cash, it's a little nerve-wracking to fill out the customs forms where they're asking, well, where are you staying? And they know my name, my hotel, all that information. But I've had no issues. I've been sweated more, returning to the U.S. in ports like Miami, where, they always question, their first thought when they see money is that it must be drug related. And
especially Miami is a bad place to fly into.
Yeah, definitely. Overseas, I've had a few run-ins. When I was traveling through Vietnam, I had declared, not a huge amount, but around $50,000. And it was right before New Year's Eve. And they pulled me into a private room. Went through my, they wanted to do a hand count of every bill and, verify that none of the hundreds were fakes. And the guy just asked me privately, he was like, well, just give me $100 and you can go. And I said, well, I don't feel comfortable doing that. Why don't we just get this all on record? I don't mind declaring it. I'm going to have to declare it on the way out. And he looked a little bit disappointed, but I guess he just wanted me, he wanted a nice,
for
nice
only
bribe.
$100, I probably would have gone for that, but it's often it would be much more. And, and I mean, some people have run into the problems where they tell you you don't need to declare, and then when you go, they confiscate the money and all those kind of things. So do you research ahead of time, like I have to make sure I declare in this country? And
That's something I always declare. There's a website called the IATATravelCenter.com. That's IATA. And that's my go-to website for, seeing about currency declaration and visa issues. Also the State Department's website for one of my first two questions is, do I need a visa or can I get one on arrival? And what's the currency, declaration, also, restrictions? Because some places you can't leave with more currency than what you bring in. And other countries, it's $10,000.
Now, how do you deal with that if you can't leave with more than you brought in? If it's something you can talk about.
Yeah, I rarely have that issue. I usually don't.
You usually lose?
yeah. I go in planning to lose.
Why is he on this show?
Well, I think if I were to go to a country like that, maybe I would plan to pay in cash for my hotel expenses. So at least I would make a declaration on arrival with the full amount and then use some of that bankroll for actual expenses. Then I have a little nice buffer where I can win some back. And if I win more than that, I have a nice paid vacation within the country. There's some other ways you can get the money transferred, either into Bitcoin or maybe prepay an Amex card but I've never done that yet.
And at some point, because you're a winning player, at some point you end up with too much cash. And some countries, it's really hard to just walk into a bank and say, hey, I want to deposit this or wire it or whatever.
Right.
How do you deal with that issue?
That's a serious issue, especially in a lot of those countries. The banks won't even open an account for you unless you have,
You're local.
Local, you have residency or you have a work visa. In those countries, it's happened a couple times. Once I was traveling through Colombia, and I'll never do this again. But I did have to smuggle more than the $10,000 just because I was there on a one night layover, and in the 4 hours I was playing, I got very lucky on the relatively low limit games there, and won $6,000, which put me just right over the limit. you know, I packed my bag cleverly, so they discovered a big wad of Trinidadian dollars I also had in there, which, you know, the customs were easy, you know, they quickly recognized that, but they missed the pack of hundreds I was hiding in a different pouch. But
did you convince them these? Did they know how much the Trinidad dollars were worth?
That was their first question, and I just laughed it off, and I said, "Oh, it's worthless." and really, you know, the largest bill in Trinidad, I think 100 Trinidadian dollars is 20, and so it's not far from the truth. But I wasn't going to tell them, "Oh, well, that's 6,000 U.S. and this is, you know."
Have you ever been stuck with worthless currency because you couldn't get it out of the country?
Yes. I was returning from a flight through a small airport in Argentina. And in this town, I had expected, you know, the airport's got to have a currency counter or a bank or something where I can exchange the Argentine pesos. And sure enough, they had a bank, but it was closed even Monday at, you know, 2 p.m. So I think it was permanently closed and it wasn't a holiday or anything. So I had to fly out of the country with these Argentine pesos. I had not returned back, and they devalued this last year. And so I've lost about $3,000 in value, but I still have them. And it's just worth.
They make good wallpaper, I understand.
Yeah. It's worth just enough to maybe recover my flight expense if I were to fly out there and, you know, immediately convert it back. But it's such a hassle.
And do you, as sort of basic strategy, do you just, when you land in a new country, do you just get a SIM card so that you have local phone service? Or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that was actually one of the first things that I was doing for a long time, was that I was collecting SIM cards and swap them in and out. So I'd have, you know, especially data service, because that's most important to me. You know, I don't need to make phone calls. You know, my family's
right.
family's not calling me, but definitely the data and the mapping service and being able to, you know, figure out how to get to my hotel, or my Airbnb, how to get to the casinos. And since just recently, I've been using Google Fi, which has an international service. It's not available in every country, but it's, I think, about 120 countries. And so I have an American number, and it's prepaid service. It's, I think, the flat rate of $30 a month, but it's $10 per gigabyte and international data. So it's very good.
Anything happened to you in Cambodia?
Oh, many things. I've scouted almost all of Cambodia. I think there's a couple casinos I haven't been to.
How many casinos in Cambodia?
Oh, there's
a lot, right?
There's 20 or 30, but they're all dotted on the borders, you know, with Thailand and Vietnam. I think this particular instance, I was playing at a game with a friend of mine, and it was a 8-deck shoe with 3-deck pen. The limits were $50 to three hands at 500. And so we went in there, you know, we were tracking the shuffle because for counting, it's a horrible game. But this was interesting because they would deal the 8-decks and then put the 8-decks aside on the side of the table under a glass case while they dealt another 8-decks. So we had to track both shoes. But
Lady Luck in Las Vegas used to do that for years and years and years. So yeah, you have to alternate.
Yeah,
shoes.
Very, very tiring. But at least I wasn't there. I had a partner. So
you tracked the blue one, and he tracked the red one.
Well, we both tracked both of them. There's probably a better way we could have done it, but it was great. After 3 days, definitely we had luck on our side. We were up around $25,000. And then on the fourth day, they decided to try to half shoe me, and I threw a fit just because that extra deck was very, very important to me. And so the manager, after 15 minutes, decided, okay, we'll go back to 3-deck pen, and they had a surprise for us. So they brought out two more shoes, and they, instead of leaving the unused shoe on the table, they returned it to the middle of the pit. And I asked my friend, and we were communicating in Spanish because they have microphones at the tables, and they spoke English, so I didn't want them to understand.
Microphones at the tables?
Yeah, two microphones, you know, very, very shocking. And So I'm chatting with them and I said, hey, make sure that they bring them out in the same order. So, and sure enough, they rotate on them like a shoe train. So it's the same. And, you know, since they decided to do that, I, you know, went through every single trick I could think of to record the, you know, the best slugs of each of the four shoes. And by the end of the trip, I think we were up $37,000. And then on the very last day, they half shoot us again. I knew there was no fighting it. And just as luck would happen, after two decks in, the count started rising. So we just max bet it all the way through the end of the shoe. We won another three and then left. So it was a lot of fun.
Is you list in here your favorite countries to go to and your least favorite countries to go to. What would they be?
Well, I'd say my favorite's probably Mexico, Thailand, Vanuatu. People in Vanuatu are amazing, and it's so remote. It's such a great place.
I can't place it on a map. Where is Vanuatu?
It's just
South Pacific
near Fiji. Fiji is nice too. It's just more of a tourist trap, very expensive. Vanuatu is much cheaper and has better deals. And the tourists are very cool Australians.
And there are casinos in Vanuatu?
Yes, there are.
And I'm surprised that Mexico is high on your list. And why is that?
It's you know, great food. The beaches are wonderful. It's got a bad rap recently for all the violence, but I've learned that as long as you're not involved with, you know, the industry, that's like the drug industry, you have nothing to worry about.
And now one of the things about Mexico is there are both legal and illegal casinos. And do you play them both or do you stick to just the legal ones or?
It's really hard to determine which ones are legal, which are legal, which are illegal. I know there's a mandatory government tax that all the casinos are supposed to pay. And I've tended to notice that the few that don't charge a tax seem to have irregular shoes. So like the, you'd be counting and every shoe ends at plus eight true and it just doesn't smell right. So
you would think that they could afford to not be the cheating ones, right? The guys who have to pay the tax would be the ones cheating.
Right.
But now is maybe I'm confusing it with somewhere else, but isn't there a tax on winning for the players there?
Yes. It's just the winnings. It's right around seven. Some places are as high as 9% tax. It's incredible.
So you just have to, and you can fade that. The games are good enough where you can still.
Well, I don't play much in Mexico, but
so you know, it's just like traveling.
It's a great place, and the peso, you know, the dollar's very strong, you know, to the peso right now. It's almost 20-1. So, you know, on top of it being cheap generally, you know, right now we have an advantage going there as Americans. For least favorite countries, definitely Afghanistan in wartime, although in peacetime, I would love to go back. You know, it may take a few years. Kuwait, I'm not too fond of Kuwait. It was way too hot. Trinidad, I would say, you know, they do have casinos, and I did make some money there, but I couldn't find any good restaurants, and not a big fan of, you know, fried chicken or Indian food. So it's very difficult for me to, you know, to survive down there.
And have you been to Senegal? And how was that?
No.
Oh, okay. It was just an example.
Yeah, it's a sample. I've seen a good flight out there from Ireland to Senegal for 270 euros. So I was considering it, but it's kind of.
How many African countries have you been to?
I've been to about six.
You have in your notes that you had a. You found a casino with good blackjack and a 15% loss rebate. How did that work? I could win on that.
Yeah, this was just I was really traveling out into the, you know, to the middle of nowhere, and the rules were so unusual. I had to ask a friend to help me because I'd never seen the redoubling, so I can triple down basically, and also it was a multi-card early surrender 10, So if you had a six card, like a six card 16 against 10, you can still surrender, which I never seen before.
A six card 16. Yeah. There can't be any little cards left.
And so, my friend helped me while I was messaging him in the bathroom. Is like, well, what's the correct basic strategy for this? And he sent me over something that I guess some Russians were using, and is similar to old, probably what you may have seen in Moscow, I'm guessing, back in the day. Mm. But I decided to play it, and just to test the waters, and it was on a CSM of all things, but I knew I had a close to a 0.5% edge off the top. And just as luck would run, I lost 8,000 that session. And some person at the table who was just being friendly, you know, recommended that I take the discount. And I was like, well, yeah, of course. Well, what's the discount? I like the discount. And and so at the time, I had no idea what she was talking about, but of course I was interested. And the casino came over and said, well, just sign this, and they handed me a 10% rebate. I was like, well, that's great. And when I went back a few months later, I realized, well, if I lose over 10,000 in a session, it's a 15% loss rebate, and that, you know, all the casinos offer this, but they just don't talk about it.
And you could do this every day?
Yeah, every day. In one day, I lost. I hit my stop loss in 12 minutes, and they seemed thrilled. So it was they were happy that I lost. They didn't really care how long I played, and I was thrilled too, because you know I could just quickly hit the pool, and I did my damage for the day, collected my 15%, and just kept hitting the tables.
Long did that last?
Well, I was out there for 3 weeks, and the first week I took a beating. I was down over $60,000 in the first week, and then
got some nice rebates though.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you switch to roulette or some other game?
I considered it, but it just didn't fit my profile at that casino. I was just worried that they might figure out I was going for the rebate if I went straight for the like a higher variance game. And it was great. It was fun. I was getting a private table treated like royalty, just flat betting three by 500. And, as I experienced the greatest swing in my life after the first week of losing, they were very, very comfortable with me. I stayed at the hotel, very nice 4-star hotel, for the next 2 weeks comped, and, had my greatest positive swing. I won just over $100,000 in 5 days. And so I went from minus 60, I recovered all the loss. And then on top of that, I made 70. And they backed me off that table with the special rules. And I can still play blackjack there, just not with the redoubles. And, you know, they figured I'm too good for that game.
Did you try going back and saying, you know what, I won't play blackjack. Yep, how about roulette?
I do plan to go back there.
Yeah. Oh, so it's still there.
Yep.
There you it's go, still everybody. Available. All you need to do is travel to 100 countries and find this game.
So. All right. Since a nameless game seems like a good place to take a break and go for commercials, a nameless country.
Wait, before we do that, I just want to say that is the real benefit of traveling, is most of the time you're going to find games that aren't that great and limits that are very small. But every once in a while, you are just going to walk into a gold mine. And, you know, that's part of why traveling is a really good strategy. So.
Oh, wait. When you're on your private table, there's no way. I mean, they can keep a good count of what your true score is. And chips in the pocket won't really help you. And they'll just. But on tables with a lot of other people, especially other big bettors, do you still get the rebate even if chips happen to disappear, or is that a strategy you use?
You probably could, but the amount of action that they get, it's rare. They definitely account for every black chip. You might be able to hide a few greens, but for the speed and definitely with the edge off the top, I was just rather play a private game without all the smoke in my face and all the other distractions. And, you know, all the other players, they would comment on my unusual playing style, even though it was technically correct. So I'd rather avoid that altogether. But
so it's just different than the way they played.
Yes, very different.
And they didn't learn from you. They just said, you're weird and just we shouldn't. He's just weird and lucky.
Right, right.
And lost $60,000 in a week. Can't be that good. Okay. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In February, the monthly promotion is a $600,000 Crazy Cupid's Money Madness, where simultaneously there will be two casino-wide progressives going. The bigger one must hit between $10,000 and $25,000, and anyone playing when it goes off without being the actual winner gets $25 in free play. The smaller one must hit between $1,000 and $2,500, and is scheduled to be hit about three times a day. Any machine, any time, so long as your player's card is inserted and you've played at least $1 in the previous 60 seconds. The next video poker class is going to be Advanced NSU. NSU is a Deuces Wild game returning 99.73. It is easy in its basics, but there are a lot of exceptions. So the class covers what those exceptions are. In some sense, it's an applied logic class. And so you're going to be learning about flush penalties and straight penalties and power of the pack and multiple penalties and penalties going both ways on both sides of the hand. And for not bright people, it's an extremely difficult class. Some people will be leaving before it is over. By the end of the class, it should be pretty small. If you're interested in squeezing every last penny out of the casino, this is a good class to go to. It's also a good introduction to the concept of penalty cards. And once you learn it, you can apply those concepts to other games as well. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. I was at a party yesterday when somebody was asking about on Super Triple Play Jackpot, I think it was, where you get a wheel spin on top of Super Times Pay, and wanted to know what the wheel spin was worth. If you go to videopoker.com and you're a gold member, they will give you the returns for various pay schedules. From those pay schedules, you can reverse engineer to find out how much the wheel is worth. If the Wizard of Odds or I have written an article about it, that would be easier, but we don't write articles about every game. And so you can get the information just by being a gold member. It's very useful. All right, we're going back to Madagascar. Anything ever happened in Madagascar?
Yes, I found a really cheap flight out there. I was traveling with my wife at the time too, and she thought it was an interesting place to go. We arrived there right in between the Ebola and the Black Plague outbreaks, which seemed like a good time to go.
Well, you didn't know the Black Plague was coming.
No, I had no idea about that. Went there and was bringing my bankroll with me after a few other plays, and had to declare $70,000 in this customs office that was not protected at all. Like, anybody could have come in there and stole anything they wanted to, and there's just a hard copy book that I had to write all my particulars in, my name, everything, how much cash I had. I was very, very nervous about that. And I went down to check into, I stayed at both of the five-star hotels, knowing that they had casinos, which turned out they were independent casinos. And was very quite disappointed. The max I could find there was, I think it was $34 max. Uh-huh. So I brought this big bankroll expecting to find something, possibly something juicy. And the game itself was great, but the limits were so absurdly small that I still played it, and
You can make $4 an hour.
Well, I got lucky off the top, and I took my winnings, and I quickly cashed out just to cover the hotel expenses. But it's an interesting place. I'd like to go back, but it's...
But we're going to wait until the limits go up to $56 before you do.
Yeah, there was... they were very firm on the limits. Surprisingly enough, is that blackjack game was trackable as well, and the French managers... They didn't seem to know how to countermeasure me, so they increased the pen and they changed the shuffle a little bit. But if you're eyeballing it, you can quickly see where the good slugs were.
I ran into that a lot, where as soon as you start winning, they just change the way they shuffle the cards. Not because they know what you're doing, they just I mean, they're just superstitious. So maybe this will help.
Right, you know, right.
Or they change the decks entirely. Now, in a lot of countries, they're just afraid of Americans, white Americans,
oh, yeah,
definitely. Bet a lot of money at blackjack.
Yep, yep.
And how do you deal with that?
There's really, there's only so much you can do being a white American. in a lot of places, you have to show your passport at the entrance, so there's no hiding the fact that, you know, even if you keep your mouth shut, they still know you're American. A lot of it's table image. You try to imitate like the Chinese guy next to you. Sometimes my bet spreads will be just wild. I'll go from seven hands of 500 to one hand of 50, and it just seems normal, I guess. And so just something that's very atypical for them. So if they've seen counters before, which doesn't probably happen too often, but you're not following the same cookie cutter, you know, you're not going chipping up, you know, like a counter would.
You mentioned in the previous story that you were traveling with your wife or ex-wife or whatever it was.
Yep.
Did you normally travel with her, or leaving a wife at home when you go, oh yeah, I'm going to 17 countries, I'll be back in 3 or 4 months? Doesn't sound like the prescription for a happy marriage. I don't know.
Well, I've been married more than 10 years. I'm very, very lucky. My wife's so understanding. At the moment, she's working on a second master's degree, so she can't travel with me as much. But in the past, about 1/3 of the time, she would travel with me. And so it was a great time for me to use the comped cruises. She likes cruising, so we always take cruises together. And, you know, for really interesting international trips, she would have a lot of kick. You know, she'd love to go see the new sites. But for places where I knew I'd be spending much of my time in the casino in a very, you know, in a less than ideal location, you know, she would pass. She doesn't like the casino environment.
Now, she has a foreign passport, and have you tried using her as a BP? I would think that would be much better than you trying to bet the money. And or she
not,
just doesn't like it. She's
not yet.
Interested in the gambling.
She may get into it, but she has other interests right now. And so it's educational interests. Later, if, you know, if she's looking for work and wants to make some money, you know, she knows this is available. We've definitely
you
used.
You might hire her?
Oh, yeah. Well, she can use our combined bankroll, so she has got a good start. We've definitely used her. She's got two names and two passports, so when for signing up for players' cards and things like that, so it's very helpful.
Suriname, which, as I recall, is in northern South America.
Yes.
What happened in Suriname?
Well, I was there briefly for just a few hours. I like to book flights, or I've done this in the past, where I pay a little bit extra to have an overnight layover in some random country or city. And so Suriname was one of those places where I was on my way to Guyana, and I saw, well, this specific flight would have a 10-hour overnight layover in Suriname. So I would, you know, check out, make, you know, go through the immigration process, go find my hotel, and then drop my bag off, which in that country is very difficult. The airport is about an hour away from downtown. And so I had just enough time to drop off my suitcase. And then I hit the ground walking around as many casinos as I could. By the time I think I was 4 or 5 hours scouting about 4 or 5 casinos. I didn't hit them all, but I had a good, you know, a good sampling of what's available there. I made it back to the hotel just in time to shower. I was so sick because I was, you know, from traveling, I'm exhausted. And then sure enough, I had to get right back on a taxi to go straight to the airport. So no sleep, but I had the hotel just for a quick shower and a place to, you know, store my suitcase while I went scouting.
So it wasn't worth staying?
No. And I haven't been back. Although you never know. There's probably stuff there, but it just seemed like poker was maybe your best bet in Suriname.
Dominican Republic.
Similar situation. I haven't stayed there for a long time. It was just an overnight layover. I decided to treat myself and stayed in a pretty nice hotel. And they had a bottle of champagne they brought to the room, which was surprising. And so I checked in, then went scouting, and went only to a couple of casinos, went back to the room and saw that I had only 2 hours of sleep. So I drank as much of the champagne as I could and just, you know, took a quick 2-hour nap. And the same driver that had picked me up from the airport, I asked him to please pick me up, you know, in the morning, because, you know, I don't want to miss my flight. And it's just very, very rough layover, but in, you know, luxurious conditions, a nice hotel, nice service, but I couldn't really enjoy it.
And have you not gone back? I know a lot of people were playing down in the Dominican Republic in the last 10 years or so.
I haven't. There's probably stuff there, but I've heard a few things about cheating, so just be mindful of that.
Hmm. Oh, actually, that's something we should maybe talk about, is places where the rumors of cheating abound,
mm-hmm.
just for people to avoid or to be very careful of.
I am certain I've been cheated in Mexico City at a very small casino. There's parts of Cambodia which are notorious for cheating. It's obvious, you know, they just deal from short shoes, and it's every single count is astronomically high.
My experience is that they're really bad at cheating. The places that
they definitely, you know, they're looking for like a 5% house edge or something. So they remove practically all the aces. I think it's very unusual. I've also seen on YouTube a video of, I know this was in Cambodia because the dealers were speaking in Khmer. They were dealing seconds from a baccarat shoe, and it's interesting because over there they shuffle the cards in the back room, and so they bring them out in a specific order, which they could know the order, and they were signaling the dealer to either deal the top or the second card based on, you know, where the money was bet on banker or player.
Well, so you could do really well at that game if you just stay less than the big players.
If I notice that going on, I'd like to bet opposite.
Yeah. What about Prague? I'd heard stories for years about cheating in Prague.
Actually, I haven't been there.
So that surprises me. That seems like a place that lots of people go. So
that's probably one reason I haven't been.
Yeah.
Usually, when you hear about these great games, if everyone seems to know about it, it's not as good as it sounds by the time I get down there.
Oh, I'm just thinking about travel in general. Prague is a city that's supposed to be nice and
Without a doubt.
Foreign currency problems. We've talked a little bit about holding some worthless currency. What about, like, if that ever happened in Peru?
Peru was my, you know, my lack of planning. I was just so used to showing up in a country and then, you know, exchanging it to the foreign currency and then using that at the tables. But something I didn't know about a lot of South American casinos is that they use U.S. dollars. So I went to Peru and exchanged, I think, 8,000 U.S. into their soles, or their local currency, which is not the currency you need for the tables in the casinos.
So you changed it back, and now it's worth 7,000.
I had to eat the fee, and it was
both ways.
Yeah, very expensive lesson. It's something, you know, learning how to exchange just enough for your immediate needs, and also, you know, with frequent travel, it's tough because you have to, you know, you exchange a lot of money, and it's hard to make a living like that when you're paying the foreign currency counters. But
a lot of casinos that I've been to in foreign countries will exchange at the casino at usually at a pretty bad rate. But as much as you change to start with, they would sell you back at whatever you paid for it in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
And then charge you some bad rate for the excess if you win. Have you found that in a lot of foreign countries? Or
That's not very typical, but I always ask if it's the same rate both ways, and then I'm a lot more comfortable with exchanging money, even at the poor rate. Just because if I have a losing session, I need to dig deep. It's nice. A lot of them, they have, you know, they say just keep a receipt for 24 hours, or one place was even up to a week, and they'll hold your currency, you know, actual, just keep it aside, you know, for
the
you.
The same bills.
Give yeah, you the back same, same exact bills. Bills.
Yeah.
Some of them are very particular about the quality of your bills. You know, if there's any markings or slight tears and creases, it's just worthless paper.
Actually, I have a friend who was just saying he's having trouble in foreign countries because he has some old $100 bills, and they don't want to take the old ones anymore.
No, they only want the new, crisp, clean look, you know,
with the stripe and
with the blue stripe, looking like it just came from the Federal Reserve. You know, that's they want nothing else. Yeah, it's, you know, in Chile in particular, I went down there and they went through each and every bill that I tried to convert into the Chilean pesos, and like half of my money was deemed worthless. And had the same issues in India, and so
would they give you back your worthless money?
Oh yeah, yeah. They just didn't. They wouldn't accept it. So it was quite the hassle. So I went there with half as much money as I expected. So,
do you ever need to bribe somebody to take your money or exchange it or anything like that?
In one instance, when I was in India, I had India is such a strange country because they have a lot of, you know, rules about the currency, and everything has to be by the book and have a lot of receipts and documentation for the source of the funds and many currency controls. I had a winning session. I was playing in the casino boats in Goa, and had some money to exchange, and I expected, oh, it should be just like everywhere else in the world. So I went to the airport and had to exchange not a lot of money, maybe $5,000. And they asked for a receipt from the casino to prove that I had won this money. And I was like, what do I was so confused. I was like, do casinos even do that? And so of course in India, there's a way around everything. And the manager there was like, well, here's a manila bag, put your money in here and hand it to me away from the cameras, and I'll get it exchanged, but at a different rate than what's posted. So I did get the money converted back into dollars, because this is really important, because you can't leave the country with the Indian rupees. That's illegal. So it'd be against the law to even, they'd see that as smuggling their currency out of the country. And so he did it as another lesson learned, and cost me about $200, but is better than, you know, the alternative.
What kind of notes do you take from in the various casinos in the various countries? So when you go to so many, your memory is going to be flawed.
I definitely take extensive notes. I take pride in that. I try to look at, you know, every single game recently, every single machine, table, dealer, even what cards they're using, you know, who's the manufacturer, shuffling procedures, everything I can record. And it's definitely helped me find advantages down the road as my games have progressed. You know, as I've learned more and more advantages, I reference my notes, and it's like, well, where have I seen that game, and at what limits were they, and, you know, what were the specific dealing procedures? And it helps a lot. It's you know, you have to look at every single thing and try to, you know, take notes surreptitiously, either in the bathroom or, you know, away from the camera, so they don't know you're actually studying their casino. And
I have to say, I've seen your notes, and they are amazingly detailed.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, like, every casino is more than a page of information. So, yeah, and I agree. Like, it's, you know, most people just don't want to spend the time to do that, but mm-hmm. it can really pay off down the road.
Yeah, yeah, and also for networking too, because you know, I've made a lot of friends, and they'd be curious about certain games, and you know, wherever I can help them, say, like, if I have, you know, if I don't know exactly how to beat a game, but I know it exists somewhere else, I'm, you know, I'm very nice to share information. I'm kind of work as an information broker. You know, I'm trading information on these games with, you know, key select people, you know, and keep it privately. But, you know, they've always helped out me with, you know, good games in return.
Yeah, I think that kind of networking is invaluable. And the other thing that is really invaluable is having people like that in other countries, because it can be so helpful to have somebody who lives wherever, you know, that mm-hmm. you can say, hey, I have a bunch of currency, can you change it for me? Or, you know, it just helps a lot to have contacts, at least in every continent, if not, you know, the specific country you're going to.
And I think scouting international locations definitely has helped me too, because it's definitely not cheap to travel to these places that are out of the way, but I get a kick out of it. I, you know, I live to travel, and other people, they would rather not do that. And so they would rather just go somewhere, make the money, and then come back to the States. So it's worked well for me. I really enjoy it. Although, you know, I try to keep the best stuff to myself.
So we have some, in the United States, you can be in the Griffin or OSN or some of the others. Do they have those organizations in most of foreign countries?
Well, there's a few countries where Biometrica and OSN do operate.
And Griffin still.
And Griffin.
They still have old Griffin books or, you know, Griffin yeah. subscriptions.
But everybody in that book is 15 years older now.
At least.
I think I haven't heard of any, you know, real databases. I know casinos communicate with their neighbors. I think it's mostly corporate wide. So if you have an issue with a certain company, especially if you have to play rated, you're probably done with the whole chain. And Europe especially is like that. If like, say, if you were playing at a hit casino and then you get backed off, you're done with all the hit casinos countrywide, you know, or even, you know, expanding through many countries, you know, you're just, you know, that company won't forget. And even in India, I eventually got backed off of the boat, and they had three casino boats there, and they just, yeah, they won't let me on anymore. But they're very, very friendly with the back off, so it's no issue at all.
Is your experience that back offs in foreign countries are much nicer than the U.S.?
Oh, much, much nicer. I haven't been backed off too frequently overseas. I think maybe 10 times in total, and two were overseas. But they were so polite, and
apologetic even.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they didn't really know for sure what I was doing in most cases, but they wanted to stop losing money. So I think they just really don't want to have that conversation. But in the States, they look at you more like you're a cheater. And, you know, they're so annoyed by APs at many casinos that they tend to lose their mind.
Yeah, my nicest barring ever was in Korea, where it was a whole ceremony. They invited me into the office, and we had to drink tea, and we sat around for a number of minutes, like chit-chatting, and then at the end, I'm very sorry, but you cannot play anymore.
It's like a closing ceremony.
Did you expect this was coming?
I knew when they invited me for tea that, yeah, it was over.
All right. We've been talking to Vagabond. Lots of interesting stories. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thank you very much, Vagabond, for your insight into playing overseas. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.